Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where satisfaction is guaranteed. Since 1997, Noble Knight Games has been serving gamers' needs globally. They stock over 100,000 new and out-of-print board games, role-playing games, CCGs, minis, and war games. They have it all. Noble Knight Games always deliver what they promise. Speedy shipping coupled with excellent and friendly customer service make shopping here a no-brainer. You'll find discounted pricing on most imprint games and reasonable prices on out-of-print and rare items. With over 15 years in the business, they know how to package your order so it arrives safely anywhere in the world. Want to transform your old games into that new item you've had your eye on? Check out their trading and selling your games section. They provide the shipping labels, you box up your games, and that's it. Don't forget to sign up for their weekly email newsletter where you can discover new and rare finds. Visit them online at noblenight.com.
Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 94, Rogue Chess with Peter Blix Bryant. I want to welcome all of you to this very special episode because, as you know, we are counting down to our 100th episode. For that, I'm trying to make every episode that much more special as we inch ever so closer to that wonderful 100. Today, I am joined by this wonderful and incredible individual who you need to meet in person. And this means you really need to get your butt over to TotalCon in Mansfield, Massachusetts. I am, of course, talking about Peter Bryant, who is here to talk with us about a great new game that he is working on. How are you today?
I am fantastic. And yes, I'm working on a new project, and it is called Rogue Chess. Now, if you're wondering what Rogue Chess is, of course, it's a chess variant. It's something that you use with chess. It does not replace chess. It's something you add to it. So you pull out your chess board, you set up your pieces, and you start your game. The only difference is that you each have cards that you can pull from, a deck of cards that you can pull from, and you each get a certain number of cards. The general suggested use is 3, but it's your game. You can draw as many as you like. But basically, we're going to go with 3 for this exam for tonight's discussion. So you each draw 3, and then when you play a move in chess, you can use a card to modify it if you wish. So you have 3 slots, and you can pull from any one of those whenever you move. Now, you don't have to use a card every time you move. You are playing chess. The goal is to checkmate the king, which I should mention that you can never do with a card. That's one of the golden rules. You cannot checkmate with a card. Mainly because the cards create so much newness and so much variation to the game that it feels kind of cheap if you checkmate with one of these. And I think, the permutations of it get too crazy because, like, some of the things that allow you to do, you're like, oh, okay, I can win the game with this, with the opening move. And then that takes a lot of the fun out of the game. So, not that that's going to happen too often. As a matter of fact, I can't think of an instance where you can actually do that. But you never know. I haven't played every permutation of this. So,
why don't you tell us what Rogue Chess is? You mentioned it's a chess variant, but how is it a variant? And why did you pick chess to create a variant of?
Ah, okay. So, when I say a variant, it means that it is chess. You are playing chess, but this is a modification to the classic game of chess. And the reason why it's not a new game is because I keep all the concepts of chess. So, for example, when you lay your cards out, you lay them out face up so that everybody can see what each other can do. So it's not a matter of, there's not a whole lot of chance. The only chance is what cards you get out of the deck. And if that is too much for you, in other words, if you say, no, you know what, I like my chess to be complete straight-up strategy, you can start the game by each side choosing which cards they want to play throughout the game. And you would lay out the number of cards you want in play and the number of cards you want on deck so everybody can still see each other's, all their cards, and there is no chance still. So that's why it's a chess variant. Why did I choose chess? Okay, so this idea came to me about 15 years ago. I was playing playing chess with a friend of mine, and he pulled out this thing called Nightmare Chess. I don't know if you're familiar with Nightmare Chess or if you remember it. It's an old game that was put out by Steve Jackson Games. It's originally a French card game, and he got the rights for it over here to distribute. Or I don't know the whole story behind it, but that's how I understand it. And then I like that. Okay, but it was crazier than this. Like, you've seen these cards, Jonathan.
Yeah.
It was over the top. I mean, like, some of the stuff you could do. They had they have a card where you can turn you're playing and you turn the board 90 degrees, and now that's how you play. So what was the side of the board is now your back line.
Wow.
And it changes. I mean, it's like, what? And you can lay down, one of the cards allows you to lay down a barrier. So you take a matchstick the size of, or anything the size of, one of the squares, and you lay it along one of the lines. And then no piece can go past that line. No piece can go through that line. So you can go all around it and everything. So that was, and that's Nightmare Chess. And it was a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. I liked playing it. But when I was talking to my friend about it, I was like, man, I like this game. I really do. But I would, you know, I have an idea for a cooler version of this. Now the idea I had at the time wasn't cards. It was actually taking chess pieces off and replacing them with new pieces. So, for example, and we'll talk about this card, the Templar. That was one of the original chess pieces I thought of. You would take the bishop off and put the Templar on the board. And now that bishop can always bounce off the side of the board. So that was kind of an interesting concept to do, you know. And I was going to give all the pieces points, so you could have pieces that would downgrade, pieces that would upgrade. And as long as each of you played with the balanced number of points, that would be your game. However, that would require modeling pieces, fabricating pieces, distributing pieces, and then all the different sizes and shapes that you would have to have, because, you know, I might have a chessboard with 2-inch pieces, or I might have a chessboard with 3-inch pieces, and if you go and buy, you know, this Templar that's made for a 2-inch chessboard, it's going to look goofy, you know. And then I also didn't want to, like, sell entire chessboards, because that kind of changed the whole concept. So it was just like, I could never get my head around how to make this work.
Well, it's good you didn't do that, because there's a game out there that does that.
Oh, really?
It's called Shuro, S-H-U-U-R-O. It's created by a Games Workshop games designer. He's done tons and tons of games. He's from Italy, and he did some of the stuff that you thought of that you didn't want to do. Like, he sells the chessboard with standard size pieces, with the stuff you take off, you put terrain on, and it's cool. But what I really like with what you did with Rogue Chess, and I can't say enough how thankful I am for the promotional copy, I like that you can buy the cards, you can support your Kickstarter, which you'll talk about in a little bit, but it's so compact, because all you need is the cards, no matter what type of chessboard you have, no matter what size, it could be virtual, whatever. You have the cards, and you can do whatever you need to, so it fits your needs. You don't have to fit its needs.
Right, exactly. And that's, so what happened was I was doing something for the Game Crafter. I was doing Cube of Death. So you've
seen Cube of Death.
Yeah. So I was doing Cube of Death, and I realized, hey, man, this making cards thing, I mean, it's a lot of work, but it's very doable, and these are great cards. I mean, I like their cards. I like their service. You know, the Game Crafter's really awesome. I love working with them. And I was like, it hit me. I was like, wait a minute. I could do my chess game, because they didn't have a name at the time. I was calling it, like, Chess Links or something like that. But I was like, I could do my chess game as cards. It just, like, kind of hit me. I was like, that's how I'm going to do it. And so I started working on it. I was like, oh, yeah, this is going to work. This would be great. So, started designing them, and I went on and started setting it up, and I made like 18 of them, and because that's 18 cards to a sheet. So I ordered one sheet of cards and started playing around with them and looking at them and everything. And I was like, yep, this is it. I'm done. I'm in. So then I decided it was going to be a Kickstarter, because I was talking to somebody at work, and I was like, I could put these together. I was like, but man, this is going to be a lot of work, and, you know, and I'd really like to hire an editor to go over these, and I would like to buy, you know, like 20, 30 decks, hiring people right away, and start putting these things out and getting it done.
I love Cube of Death, but I think Cube of Death, or a game like it, which Rogue Chess, really could benefit from Kickstarter, because Cube of Death is such a fun and amazing game, and yet so much more could be done with a game like that if you had the support mechanism that something like Kickstarter happens to give. So the fact that you're using that with Rogue Chess, I think is just superb. It's great planning on your part. With the promotional cards, if this is any sort of indication of what the final product's going to be like, it can only go up, but it's already astronomically good because the cards feel good. They look great. It's great design, layout, and placement. Color, everything is just spot on. They are really beautiful, and they feel nice in your hand. Like, I just want to keep shuffling these things because they feel so good. Longtime listeners would know, and you Blitz wouldn't know, but I have this background way back of gaming with, like, Magic the Gathering and the World of Warcraft card games, like, all that kind of stuff. So just always having cards in my hand, and, like, I'm talking to you right now, and I'm shuffling the cards in my hand because they just feel so good.
Right. Oh, well, cool. Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I really like the Game Crafter's quality. I mean, the inks. I mean, this, like, when the light hits this black, it's so shiny, it turns white. You know, it's like, just like it should. It's nice, deep, deep dyes. As a matter of fact, my prototype set, I had to, the one before that I was using, I had to lighten the blues up because the ink was so, like, rich and dark that you couldn't, the blues were hard to see, like, other than black. They weren't quite black, but they were really, really dark. So I had to lighten them up because their inks are just so rich. So, I'm really happy with them.
They all look wonderful. I'm sure it took you a lot of time to get it to where it is here, but it shows. All the effort really shows.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I mean, like, all the distressing on them and everything, that's all hand-painted. Coming up with that chest design and the whole look and feel of it. I mean, you know, I really wanted this, the look and feel of this to flow throughout the entire design. So, like, it all started with the chess pieces. So the six chess pieces, the graphics for those, they were the inspiration for the rest of the deck, the way the rest of the deck was going to look. Once I developed those, I was just like, yeah, that's it. I like that. And that came with just playing around with stuff, you know, a lot of playing around with stuff. And then I was like, all right, that's it. The whole thing is going to have this sort of grungy, like, distressed feel to it. And then, you know, that just kind of fits in with the name and everything because it's, you know, it's Rogue Chess. And, you know, we're a bunch of rogue chess players. And look out because we'll play chess on you.
It fits in, too, because chess goes all the way back to India. We always think of, or at least I do anyway, of this medieval Western European kind of game. And they're still finding chess pieces from thousands of eons ago. People who we would never even have imagined knew what chess was were playing chess, and they're unearthing stuff and archaeological digs, and the stuff's looking like this. It's all distressed. It has maybe prongs missing from it and different things. So this adds that air of authenticity to it, too. Yeah, it allows it to be fantasy but feel real at the same time.
Maybe that was like a subliminal, subconscious thing, you know, that chess is so old that give it that old, cool look to it. To be honest with you, I am not a chess champion type or anything like that. I play chess. I like chess. I know how to play it, and I've played many games of chess. But I am no expert. I'm not, never belonged to a chess club or anything like that. But as I was doing my research on chess, because when I was designing these pieces, I wanted to see, because I knew there were other pieces that existed. I knew there were variants throughout history that have existed, and I wanted to get a feel for what other people had done with them over the years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like in India, the Indian chess that you're talking about, they had an elephant, and I think he was the rook type, but he moved a little differently. Like, it's mutated and all, and I think the chess set we know today dates back to as early as the 15th century, 1500s.
Either I think you might be right.
Either the 1500s or the 15th century, 1500s. So that it's funny because in my pitch video, which I'm finishing up, I'm trying to get that finished up because we launch. By the time you're hearing this, it's already launched. But we launch on the 24th of June, and I've only got a couple days to finish all this stuff up. But I've recorded the baseline video, and one of my lines in the video is, Rogue Chess, the coolest thing to happen to chess since the 15th century.
I like it.
So, yeah, I've done some research. And like, all kinds of stuff. I mean, like, there's strategies. There's something called forking. I was like, did you know you could fork in chess? that just means when a piece, as I understand it, when a piece could take one piece or another piece, so it can fork. It doesn't mean anything special. It's just something to refer to. And then, like, you know, there's the en passant.
Yep.
Right. And then, you know.
I remember being a kid and being like, I really like this. It's right. useless for most things, but it sounds cool and no one knows yeah. what it is. So right. I'm just going to start throwing the term around.
Don't make me en passant you. It's like, would you like cheese on that? So.
No, but if you have grape upon, why not?
Right, right. So, anyway, so do you want to talk about the card some? Talk about
yeah. I'm looking at one actually that's really interesting. It's called a spy.
Okay.
I know they had spies in medieval warfare. I've never thought of a spy in chess, so I'm really intrigued by this.
Okay, so the all right. So what the spy is? All right. So people know each one of these. Every card is tied to a piece, and they're equally distributed. So there are six different types of pieces on a chessboard. There are 48 cards in each deck. So that is eight different versions for every piece. So the spy is a pawn, so you can only play this card on a pawn. And it allows him to move anywhere on the board where there's an empty square. So he can move to any empty square on the board. And the thought behind that is that, and it's funny because I was talking to somebody else about this real quick, all these cards kind of tell a story. There was a thought process that went into these, where I got the name from and how I came up with the card. So the spy, his story is, it's a simple story. He's a spy, so he sneaks in behind enemy lines. And that's a real easy one. Some of the other ones are a little more complex. So anyway, what you do is on your turn, you play this card, you pick your pawn up and you stick them on any square you want to stick them on. Now, you'll notice that there's a special on this, and the special says that you may not upgrade on your movement turn. You must wait until your next turn to upgrade. So you would, you know, a lot of people would take their pawn and they would stick them on the back row and try to resurrect their queen or some piece that they could resurrect. So you can move them to the back row, but you can't instantly upgrade, which gives your opponent one round to try and take you out or position a piece to trap you in or take you out once you do that. It's just to give the other guy a chance, you know, to keep you from just, hey, look at that, I got a queen. Which is fine.
You could instant win that way.
You
potentially.
Could. Potentially, but like we said before, or like I was talking to you before about this at an earlier time, the cards can never be used to checkmate. You can never checkmate with a card. That's there are two golden rules, and that's one of them.
What's the other one?
The other golden rule, crap.
Always buy you a beer if we're playing you in a game?
Yes, always buy me beer if we're playing me. I'll come back to that one. I brain fried on that. There is another golden rule, but the main golden rule is you can't checkmate on a piece, or on a card, rather.
So then the spy can move around a lot. Yes. In each of the cards that you said, they have the layout with the name, they have that little chessboard right. on it that shows the moves, and then the description at the bottom saying what it can do for a move, if it can capture, and if so how, and any special abilities. So that's on every card?
Yes, every card has it. So that's the standard format. So the standard format basically goes, you got the title at the top, and then you've got the chessboard right under the name. And the reason why that's there, and it's very big, is so that when I set this on my side of the table, next to the chessboard, you can look over and see graphically what I can do. You may not be able to read the text from where you're sitting, but you can see the picture. And the pictures, I try to make them as self-explanatory as possible. You can always ask to see the card, of course.
Yep.
But once you've played this a couple times, you start to get the feel for it. And these are pretty standard. I try to standardize it throughout the whole deck. Now, the deck that I gave you is a prototype deck, so there was some transition to where I was standardizing things. But at this point, everything is standardized. So, like, when you see this graphic on the spy, there's another card that does basically the same thing, has exact same graphic. And then, you know, I try to use a standard nomenclature for all this and symbolism, which is in the rule book. So the rule book is going to have all these symbols and what they mean and what the graphics mean and how to read these. So anyway, not to bore your audience. But
well, no, but I was just thinking, like, I'm looking at one here called Zealot, which yep. I'm sure has an interesting story behind it. But what I think is really interesting is it has that standardization of design when it pertains to movement, because I recall seeing similar kind of movement on some other cards, and the layout of the movement for the map is very similar, and the wording is either identical or similar. So I think it's helpful to have that, so that way when you're playing a game, like, you don't want the focus of this to take away from playing the game of chess. It's to enhance it.
Right.
And if you have to think too much about, wait, what does this card mean? What is this really doing? You're losing your concentration on playing the game of chess, and it becomes something separate from chess. Whereas, if I'm understanding correctly, your whole purpose for this is to add a new flavor to chess.
Yes.
To make like cheddar chess or something like that. Bacon flavored chess.
Right. Bacon. No, I like, I'm stealing it. It's bacon flavored chess. I love it. Cause who doesn't love bacon, right? Yeah. So, you're right. And that, like, so let's go to that zealot real quick. We'll just talk on that. So you see the four arrows there are four arrows on this card, which indicate the direction he can go, and they're on the diagonal. And they're arrows because he can go any direction, any distance in that direction. That's why it's an arrow. If it was a straight line that connected the two pieces, that would be an exact amount of movement. And being that it's white, it's a jump. If it was black, he'd have to stay on the ground.
Oh,
that's important.
You thought this through. I like this.
I did. And if you'll notice, his circle has blue in it, right? That means it's a movement. If it had red in it, that would mean it was an attack. And if it had red and blue in it, it could be used as a move or an attack.
Oh, you are a genius. I wondered if there was anything behind the colors besides them being pretty.
Yes, there is. And if you see green, so let's go over. You have the gate. Let's look at
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I do have the gate.
Those arrows are green. That's because its movement is special.
Oh, so you are a smart man.
There you go. See? Well, it really... Wait, you're giving me too much credit.
No, but this is... I love this.
In the design, it became a necessity. It's one of those things where you think somebody's a genius because they figured something out. Mother necessity. That was all Mother Necessity figuring that out for me. Because as I was designing this, I was like, I have to differentiate this because I'm looking at this card and I'm looking at that card and I'm like, how can it's the same graphic, but they're different, but how do I make them the same but different? So that's how I did it. That's where colors came in. And that's why I chose, I think it's really interesting that the way they turned out, that the cards are all black and white. But the only color on them, the only colors other than black and white, and well, on the gray for the board, is the blue and the red and the green, and it makes them pop, makes them stand. Like I think it makes it jump right off the card.
My attention really gets drawn to that.
So I like that because that's the important part, especially when you're looking at it from a distance. Because if I'm on the other side of the board, I'm looking at the cards you have on your side, and I'm looking at the card, saying, what can that card do? Well, it only has blue in it. So it's only a movement. I know that. I mean, I don't have to read the card or anything. I can just look at it and go, it's only a movement that he can do. And I can see where his movement is, and I can see it's a bishop. So there's not a whole lot else I need to know. I mean, if there's a special, there'll be green in it. So it's like, I know I don't need to look at the special. So it keeps everything pretty easy.
Well, one of the things I like, and presumably this wouldn't be the case, but let's pretend someone who is illiterate is playing chess. Like, they're that good. They're a chess grandmaster. They can look at your diagram here and... on their own, they could really reasonably so figure out how to move the piece.
Right.
With just maybe some brief instruction from someone else. So you could do that. You could play the. I could play this with my little cousins.
Right. Right. Yeah. And we'll get to talking about that because I did have an angle in this for kids, to help with kids, to help, you know, to for these to be useful for kids.
You really covered all your bases so far. I am thoroughly impressed.
Trying to. All right, so, you know, we were talking about the spy before, so he can jump to anything, any square, and that's a pawn. All right, so that card can be used on a pawn. But, you know, I want to hit one of these other ones. So we'll go over to that zealot that we were talking about.
Okay.
All right, so let's go down the line. So zealot is his name, and the story behind that is that it's a knight, so he's like a warrior, right? But he moves like a bishop. So I gave him a bishop-y or a religious-y type name, you know, like zealot. So he's like a warrior priest kind, you know. That was the thinking behind that name. So then you come down to the board itself, and it's got four blue squares, or four of the circles with the blue symbol in it. Oh, and by the way, circles are your pieces, squares are the other guy.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
So that's important. So he has the starting point where he is in the center, and then he's got four arrows in a diagonal coming off of him, and they're white, which means it's a jump. So basically, he can move in any direction in a diagonal, and it's a leap. And it says so in the move. It says, as bishop, see special. And then you get into where it has capture, and it says none, which means you cannot use this card if you're going to capture a piece. So you can't do that move unless it's just a move. If you can't capture with this. So then you get into the next line, and that says special, and it says this is a leap. It's so you know that you can move like a bishop, but you can jump over any piece in the way.
I like that.
Which is, that's pretty nice. That can get a knight clean across the board, which is cool. And then let's step up one more. Let's go to a bishop.
Okay.
And I'm gonna go with the heretic.
I thought you might.
So the heretic, I like him, and the reason. So we'll go to the name. So he's a heretic. So bishops all have like bishop-y or religious-y type names. So a heretic is one who is kind of going against his religion. And as we know, bishops are either black square bishops or white square bishops, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he can move one in any linear direction, which is what he can do, he becomes the other color. So he goes from being a black bishop to a white bishop, or a white bishop to a black bishop. So he's a heretic because he's betraying his color. Not his color as in his peace, but his color as in the colors he travels on.
Yep, so you could end up having two white or two black bishops,
right.
In essence.
Yep. Which can be kind of confusing for the other guy. And usually I see a card like this being played out of necessity. So in other words, you want to get to a point where you want to checkmate the king, and you see, you know, you're like planning a strategy, like, oh man, if this guy was only on a white square bishop, I could do it. Ah, I'll play the heretic. Now he is a white square bishop. Here we go.
I like that.
So there's that one, and then we'll
what's this Templar?
Alright, so Templar. So a Templar is another, you know, that's another like kind of warrior-ish a bishop. And so what he can do is he is a massively mobile bishop. I imagine him as a bishop on a horse with his water sprinkler, holy water sprinkler, getting ready to, you know, smash the enemy in the head. So he can move as a bishop, but he has a special. And he can capture as a bishop, also with the same special. And what that special is, he's allowed to bounce one time off the side of the board. So he'd go to the side of the board, and then he could change direction and go the other direction diagonal.
To continue his movement, right?
To continue his movement or attack.
Oh, because he has a blue and the red.
Yes.
Right. Excellent.
All right. Then let's do a rook.
Okay.
We have the gate. Now, all the rooks are named after buildings or some kind of structure or a weapon or something like that. They're not people. They're, you know, because they're like the, you know, everybody refers to him as the castle. So he's the gate, and you know, that I picture that as the ability to pass through something. So what I gave him was he moves like a rook, moves like a normal rook, and captures like a normal rook, except he may move through any square occupied by a piece of his own color. So he could literally move across the board and just pass right through any pieces of his own color, not the enemy's, but his. And that's why he has the green arrows. So if he's like, let's say there's one of his own pawns is in the way, he just passes right through him. So it's like he opens up the gate and lets him through.
That's awesome.
Then I love this one. This one's fun. You know, a friend of mine says he thinks it's not going to work out, but I'm betting it will. It's the Phoenix. It's the Phoenix. Now, this is one of my really interesting cards, because what happens is you play this when someone captures your queen, because it's a queen card.
Ooh.
So if somebody captures your queen, you say, I'm invoking Phoenix. So you lay that down. You can lay it out, you know, anywhere, like to where it's visible that it's in play. And you can't replace it. So it's while it's in play, you can't replace that one. So what that does is that states that once the person who took that queen moves off of that square, you'll take your queen and put it back. I think, wait a minute, hold on. No. I'm sorry. Sorry.
You not lie. The, no.
Not the queen. I'm sorry. I changed that because I was like, that's stupid. No, it's any other
piece. No, that's awesome is what it is.
It's any other piece. So you can put down any other piece that's been captured of yours, like a rook or a bishop or whatever. So he like takes your queen and you go, oh, Phoenix. And then when he moves off that square, you go, I'll put a knight in that place because it resurrected.
I like that.
And then here's the prince. So the prince is a king. And the king, he moves like a king as normal, except he can wrap the side of the board. So if he's all the way on one side, he can just move to the other side.
Oh, okay. That's really cool.
And he can capture that way too. So now the story behind him being the prince is because the thinking on this is while the king's in play, everybody's got their eyes on him. They always ignore the prince. So he's able to sneak around and do this. You know, that was just my thinking on that.
That works, though.
Not a big story, not a great story, but that was where I came up with it. So I don't want to talk about the cards too much anymore. I don't want to bore people. You know, I could go through the whole deck, and I have 54 in front of me. Jonathan has the same 54. And I have, there's going to be 48 in the deck, and there's two decks. So there's going to be a total of, what does that make, 96? Is my math good there?
You're the math 90. Guy, not me. I don't know.
Yeah. No, 90s, that's 96. And And then is my stretch goal that will increase that sum. We'll talk about that when we talk about stretch goals. But that was that's it. That's the deck. That's Rogue Chess.
Before we go any further, I have to say, shut up and take my money.
I was waiting for somebody to say that. I love that phrase.
As Philip J. Fry would say.
That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping people will do. You know what I mean? Of course we do. If you're starting a Kickstarter, that's what you want people to think.
When you gave me your Cube of Death way back, I was so excited for that. And then playing in that in Total Con was really, really excited. And then when you were talking about Rogue Chess with me and we were coordinating for you to come on the show, I was like, I like chess. I'm not really into chess, but I like chess and I like different things and I like different variations of chess. I like what I've read about that other game I told you, Shuro, and I like this game called Feudal, which you may be familiar with, an old Avalon Hill game.
Yes, I have played Feudal. Oh my god, that is a fun game.
I love Feudal. So I was really excited for this, and the whole card mechanic and everything, and when the cards came, I drooled over them, because I was looking on your website and looking at the cards you had there, and I was really excited, and then I'm opening up the cards, and I'm flipping through, and I'm reading them, and just totally got reinvigorated for chess. And then as we're recording now, just more and more, I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to get my hands on? I got to buy it is what I got to do. I'm very excited for this.
Cool.
And not like that fake, I'm a podcast host, excited that sometimes people might feel the need. Like, I am legitimately 110% excited about this.
Awesome. Well, good. Well, so do you want to talk about the reward levels?
Yeah, let's get into all the Kickstarter stuff. Because
okay, cool.
You pick Kickstarter for a reason, yep. And as anyone who's done Kickstarter, like I've supported a few Kickstarters. I'm usually one who's hesitant. And this is probably not a good thing to be talking about trying to promote a Kickstarter product, but I'm usually hesitant because so many Kickstarters fail and they for one reason or another, they don't work out. But I've been lucky enough in the ones that I've done that not ones I've run, but ones I've supported that I've backed that they've worked out. And as anyone who's backed one or at least looked at one knows, there's all these different levels of backing that has some sort of reward value. And then there's usually a stretch goal, which is a term you had mentioned. So why don't you tell us about how you're – tell us everything about your Kickstarter. Just talk about Kickstarter.
All right. So I decided to go to Kickstarter because, you know, I need some funds to finish up some artwork. You know, I've done most of it myself, but – I really do need to get a graphic artist in here to make sure, you know, that this goes down properly. I'm going to write a rule book, and I want the rule book to look really good. So I need some help with that. I mean, I'll probably do most of the work, but I got this guy, Robert, that I talk with, and I want him to do the layout of the book for me. So, you know, that's not free. And then, of course, I have to pay an editor because – if you go through these cards, you're going to find one that has a misspelling right in the freaking title. As hard as I tried not to. And Chariot. I misspelled Chariot.
I didn't want to say anything, but I happened to find an extra period on one of the cards. But
Now
that you mentioned it.
Yes.
We have prototype decks, which is completely different than the finished product.
Right, absolutely. These have not been proofread. I've proofread them, but I created them. So, you know, you don't check your own work.
No.
So, you know, that doesn't come for free. But it's not a lot of money we're talking about. That's why my Kickstarter is only $3,000.
Oh, that's very doable.
Right. That's what I think. You know, I don't really need much more than that to finish it up. I mean, I hope people buy more than that because then I can get the decks cheaper and get more of them out. And then my big goal is if I have a pot of money left over, you know, above and beyond all my expenses and all that kind of stuff, I want to buy, you know, a chunk of these to take to conventions and sell and stuff like that. You know, get them at that discount price. Because because buying these at one deck at a clip is expensive. I mean, it's like, I don't know, like, see, it's like $15.
I can believe that.
For a deck if you buy one. And if you buy 500, they're $6 a piece.
Oh, well, there you go.
Or something like that. I mean, I think that's the number I was looking at. Then there's shipping. So it's $15 for the shipping, right? Or I mean, $15 for the cards, and then it's like $6 for shipping for the cheapest shipping. So now you're at $21 for the deck. And it's like, man, that's a deck of cards and it's 20-some bucks? You know, I'd pay that for something like this. I mean, I would, but it's kind of like I feel like I'm being raked over the coals, and it's not something I can resell. You know, I can't resell that at all. Like, I can't go, all right, well, I'll sell this to you for 28, you know, because somebody's going to be like, oh, come on, man, are you kidding me, really? So so Kickstarter will help me build up an inventory that I can take to conventions and stuff and spread this around, take it to Origins, because my ultimate goal would be hopefully to find a distributor. And I can't do that if I'm not showing these around, if I'm not, you know, building buzz and building, you know, building a following with this. You know, I want to be the next, not that I want to be, it would be cool to be the next Cards Against Humanity, you know.
Okay.
Where I think they're making like 40-some million a year or something now off that game. It's ridiculously. Ooh. Well, it took off. They didn't make that much off of Kickstarter. They got distributed through Amazon, and now it's off the chain. These guys are making ridiculous amounts of money. Good on them. That's awesome. So that's why I chose Kickstarter. I think it's a perfect vehicle for this. I think it's the right way to go. It just feels right. The only problem I'm having now, and something I'm trying to finish up before Monday, is figuring out my price points. So, the price point, I'm going to list my price points as I talk to you, but these are tentative. They could change a little bit. So by the time you get this, if you go online, the prices are a little different. It's mainly because I'm looking into distribution now, because, you know, you get funded, you buy all your inventory, they ship it to you, so you got to pay for that shipping. And then now I have to ship it to each individual person, right? Well, let's say this thing is super successful and something, 10,000 packs get sold, okay? Well, that's great. I cannot fulfill 10,000 orders. I personally can't do it. So, I've got a distribution, I forget what they call it's a distribution house. So you send them your inventory and they take care of it for you. And they handle international shipping and all that kind of stuff, all the tariffs and the taxes, and they handle all that stuff for you. Now that costs money too. So now I'm trying, you know, gotta get that price, and I gotta get international shipping, which I had to add extra on because everybody tells me, order fulfillment, that's what it's called.
Okay.
What everybody tells me is that international shipping has killed some of these people on Kickstarter. I mean, they've had a successful Kickstarter, everything's good, they go to ship everything internet, they fulfill all the international shippings, and they lose money. They actually lose money on the product. One of the guys, somebody was reading on one of the forums, he said that they put a note on their next Kickstarter, said, sorry, international buyers, but we found it's more economical to take our product out in the parking lot and set it on fire than it is to sell internationally.
I heard about that.
They didn't open it up to international. Now, that has to do with the fact that they didn't do enough research. Because
international shipping's awful, though. I work at a library, and you wouldn't think that has much of anything to do with international shipping.
Right.
But what I do is I send and receive material for people. Like, if you want something and your local library group doesn't have it, we'll go anywhere as far as they want to go to get it. And I've gone to Japan, not physically, I wish, but I've gone to Japan and Italy and Australia, UK, wherever. But that stuff has to get sent back, and the cost of that is more than, like, where I work, what we can absorb. So the person who wants it has to pay that. And on the low end, that's like $15 to $20 for a tiny little thing.
Yep.
So I can definitely see, even someone who does the research, I can definitely see how that could just make it a non-starter.
Oh yeah, sure. And that's why I'm trying to do my research like as best I can before this release, and trying to get the prices. I mean, currently I'm literally adding like $15 and $25 to shipping for international, just to cover myself, so I don't get, even if I take a little bit of a hit, let's say it's more than 15, it's not going to be that much more than 15. It's a deck of cards.
Mm-hmm.
I think the my buddy sent a book and a t-shirt and some glasses to New Zealand as part of his Kickstarter, and he said that cost him $26.
That's so not bad.
So I think I'm in a good place. And the fulfillment center that I'm looking at, they have distribution centers in other countries, so they could say, oh, you have, you know, 1,000 decks going to Europe, right? Mm-hmm. We'll send them as a bulk shipment, which brings the price way down. So they would ship all 1,000 to Europe and then ship out the individuals. So they wouldn't be $25 a piece. They would be, say, $8, because it's not coming from the United States. It's coming from, say, Germany and going to Italy. Well, that's not as big a deal.
Yeah, that's a huge savings right there.
Right. So that's what I'm looking into. Now you have to pay them, of course. So there's a fee involved in that. You know, how much is that? I don't know. I'm trying to get information back from them. I've already started doing my research on that. So again, so these may change a little bit. So let's
start at the bottom. Okay. What's the entry level way someone can get into it?
Right. Okay. So I have been clever. If I say so myself, I have 6 levels, and each one of them is a chess piece in order.
Ooh.
So there's the pawn level. All right. So the pawn level, now this one's not going to change because this doesn't cost me anything. This is you giving me money for the time I've put in so far. So this is you will receive a PDF of the base deck, and it's formatted for an Avery 5390 template. So if you go on the internet and you buy Avery 5390, they're name badges is actually what they are, and they're about the size of a playing card. That sheet will be formatted for that. You stick that in your printer, you print this PDF, you'll be able to break those out as cards.
That's really, I used something like that at one point for business cards for Wargaming Recon.
Yep.
I bought at like the local Staples, whatever your office supply store is. I bought them right there, and they were business cards. I'm sure they had the name plate ones. But they were really easy to break out, to print everything. It was easy as pie.
Sure. So that's the $10 level. You get the base deck, which is the 48 cards in a PDF. You print them out yourself, and there you go. The only thing it costs you is the $10 and whatever you paid for the Avery cards, and of course your ink. My advice, if you do that, if you should be interested in buying that one, I would just not print the backs of the cards because there's a lot of black ink on it. I would just print the fronts. Because that's all you really need. You know, the backs can be black. It can be white, unless you are really, you're really into this and you want to like flip them over, paint the backs. If you want to use the ink, personally,
like the whole purpose of the back is really just to conceal what it is until you draw the card.
Yeah,
so it doesn't matter whether it has the awesome artwork, which I think is worth it, or if it's the blank label on the back.
Well, I'm just saying, if I was going to print the back, I would just buy the cards. I think we'd be breaking even about them with all the ink and the labels and the printing and all that. I think I would just buy the deck. But anyway, if you're international though, hey, if you live in Zimbabwe, or if you're stationed in Afghanistan, you may just say, you know what, it's too much trouble to get the cards here. I can get those labels, or I can just get pieces of paper and I can cut them out.
Yeah.
Because there's always that option. So that might be good for you. If you're in that situation.
Yeah, so that's even more affordable.
That's that level. The next level is currently at $25, and that's the knight. And you'll receive the deck, the same kind of deck that you got. Not those cards, because that's, again, that's a prototype. But whatever cards wind up in the base deck, you'll get those 48 cards with the printed rules. And yep, that's it. Yeah, that's what you get. And then on that one, like I said, $15 to ship outside the U.S., and that may change. It may come down depending on when I talk to this fulfillment center. Because I'm not trying to stiff people. I want to give them value for their money, but I also don't want to get killed in this whole endeavor.
Well, part of the problem is that we're recording before the Kickstarter has happened.
Right.
So although listeners are listening to this, whenever you're listening to it, which, I mean, this episode goes out the day your Kickstarter starts.
Right.
And someone could be listening to it in 2050, or they could be listening to it 2 weeks after the Kickstarter starts.
Sure, right.
So the fact that we're doing it before, and it's hard because you don't have the information.
Right.
You have tons of information, but there's still these little pockets that you're filling
in. Right, right. And it's kind of funny because if you're listening to this in September, hey, we may have made it. Woo! I don't know. So the next level is the bishop. Now, the bishop level is the expansion, is the base deck, which is 48, and the expansion deck, which is the next 48 cards. And they come in one of these beautiful small pro boxes. You may have seen Ben had his ninja cards in these,
yes,
which turned me onto this box. It is a nice, sturdy box. I actually bought one of these with the original prototype rogue, the prototype rogue chess logo on it, and I carried it around in my backpack for 3 weeks. Because I wanted, and I pulled it out from time to time. I threw it down on the floor. I treated it like someone might treat their box, and the thing held up. It held up great. So it's like I have a lot of comments. I like this box. This is a good travel box. And the two decks come in that with the printed rules. And then the next level is the rook. All right, so you get everything you get for the bishop, except you get it in a bigger, same kind of box but bigger. And you get the you get an 18 by 18 inch rogue chess board, a custom board that I've painted with the same kind of distressing and same feel, and chess pieces. Now they're standard chess pieces. I'd have to raise the price way too high to buy custom chess pieces. This is going to be at the $50 level. So you get a nice sturdy travel box, just like the one I said. You get the deck, or both decks, and you get chess pieces, and that's it, because that's everything you need to play rogue chess.
That's a great deal, though. I mean, there's so many different board games out there that are $50. It comes with everything you need, and this is a great price point, because you could go buy a chess set if you don't have one and then get this, but instead, why not just spend the $50 and get everything together?
And plus, you're going to have a board that is really cool and distressed and matches your cards and everything, so it's neat. Oh, God, I think it took me forever to paint, too. I hand-painted that one, too.
That's awesome.
So then hand-painted it in Photoshop. I'm a Photoshop guy, so if you ever hear me say draw or paint, it means Photoshop. So then the next level is the Rook, which is, that's $80. No, that was the one we just did. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Take that. All right, so the next level is the Queen. Now, the Queen, this is a beautiful, I love this one. Now, it's $250, so I know not a lot of people are going to buy into this one. You know what? No, let me take that back. This is a good one, but this is for retail. This is the retailer level. That's right. I switched these two. All right, so the Queen is the retailer level. So you'll get 10 base decks and 10 expansion decks. And that's it. That's what it is. And it's $250. If you do the math, it works out to about $12.50 a piece.
That's actually really good, because a lot of small businesses can just go ahead and give it a try and see how it's going to sell. They could split it if they're friendly with another local business or whatever, and do it and just get the stuff out there. And it not only is it good for them and good for you, but I think it's really good for the player base, because it helps to spread it more easily. Not everyone has a computer. Not everyone goes online or uses Kickstarter, but this would allow other people a chance to get into the game and play it and try another version, another flavor, the bacon chess.
Right, right. And plus, if let's say you can make a profit off of this. I mean, at $12.50 a piece, you could sell these things easily. You could sell the decks easily. I would think at least 15, but probably 20.
Yep.
So you're still gonna make a profit off of them. And it gives you 10 sets, and then this would also be a good one for, like, let's say you have you run a chess club in your school and you want to use these for chess club. You might say, well, heck yeah, our school will pay the $250 for that. Our club will pay the $250 for that, because that gives us 20 decks and all my people can be playing with these at the same time. You know, so that's kind of a neat, you know, and plus people have told me, my research, you know, and people I've talked to online about doing a Kickstarter, they said you really should have a retail version, because stores really do buy these. People really, like, someone who's running a gaming store will be looking at Kickstarter and go, I want that, because mine will be the only store that has that for a while.
Yep.
You know, because I'm not, here's another thing, listen close, if you buy into this, I am not going to release this for anyone else to buy until all the orders have been fulfilled, so you will get yours first, because I could put in this huge order and then go, okay, now you can buy them online, and you could have people getting them before you get them. And I'm not doing that. That's not going to happen. Not until every last order has been fulfilled will I allow anyone else to buy any more of these. And then the last level, that's the King. This is the beautiful one. This one I like. It's another $250. It's same as the Queen in price, except you get two decks of each. So you get two base decks, two expansion decks. So you don't have to share your My line is, so you don't have to share your cards with your unworthy opponent. Plus, you receive, and this thing is beautiful, a custom hand-carved wooden chess set and board.
Oh.
It's beautiful. It's like from a log. So this guy, I found this guy, he's in Tunisia. He cuts logs, right, into a 1-inch square or 1-inch thick piece, and then he puts a chess board on it. So, you know, and he refinishes it and puts the chess squares in, and then he puts a bottom on it, and he puts two drawers in it, and then he carves all the wooden, the individual pieces. So you get a chess board with two drawers, a drawer on each side, and it has your chess pieces in that drawer. And then when they get to me, I have a laser engraver set up, and he's going to laser engrave the Rogue Chess logo on it, and then your name on it if you want that on there. And then, and then of course I'm going to sign the bottom of the board if you want me to, the underside of it. And then, the last thing you get with that is, you get, I'm making a t-shirt called The King, and I've decided it's going to be The King or The Queen, depending on what you want. So, you know, if it's a woman who buys in this, she may want The Queen. She may not care. She might want The King. Or you might have a guy who wants The Queen. Who knows? We're all special, right?
We're not going to go there.
No. But it's cool. I don't care. Whatever. Whatever you like. But it's going to be a special edition Rogue t-shirt that will let everyone know who was the ultimate backer. And these t-shirts will only go to the people who back at this level. After that, I destroy the design, and I'll never make those t-shirts again. So you show up at a convention with The King, right? And you come to me and you say, you show me your t-shirt and say, hey, I'm like, all right, man, you're sitting at my table. You're playing me.
Well, we got to back up for a sec.
Okay.
For a backer level of $250, give or take, depending on how things work. But basically, it's $250. You can get a custom handmade chess set that's gorgeous, and that's less than what you can pay in a store for, you know, a quote-unquote handmade thing that's probably not half as nice.
Well, I did my research. I found a guy who it's a good deal, and one of the things that was important to me was that this is not something that's cookie cutter. Every one of these he makes is an individual one. It's they're similar, of course. It's all the same design. But they come from a slab of a tree, so they, by definition, they are all unique in their own way, much like a fingerprint.
Yeah, well, just like all the rings of wood and everything, everything's going to have its own different something about it, its own characteristics.
So when I saw that, and he's got a good price point, I guess because he's coming out of Tunisia, you know, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, I guess maybe the dollar goes further there or something because it was a really good price that I got it for. It's not like $10. I mean, it was considerable considering I have to pay for the shipping as well and then all that.
Well, definitely.
But it's within my price point. I worked out the cost. I got a quote from him, and the $250 covers it and gives me some extra breathing room in case, you know, something goes awry. But yeah, they're nice looking. I mean, and mind you, I don't have one in front of me. I'm going from the pictures just like anyone else would on the internet.
Yeah.
But they look great, and I've seen different pictures. He's shown different pictures of the different boards, and they all look really good. I want one of these. As a matter of fact, if I get enough money from this thing, I'm going to buy one of these from him for myself.
I think that really the price point's perfect enough just for the handmade chessboard, if nothing else.
Right. And then of course you got to get the decks, because I mean that's, you know, if you're not
getting
the
decks, how else are you
going to play? Right, exactly. So and I like the fact that. That each side gets their own set of cards. So, like, if you and I are sharing a deck, and there's each one of these cards is individual, it means that, you know, if I pull the squire, you can't.
Yep.
I'm the only one that can have that card. But if we each have our own decks, we could both have that card. So there's, I like that aspect. So
yeah, well, it increases the playability of it.
Yep, I think so. So then, real quick, because we're, I don't want to take your listeners out too long, because I know your format is an hour, right?
Yeah, it's roughly an hour, although
close there.
I have done some longer shows, and listeners tell me they love them, and I shouldn't say this because it can come out snarky, but I don't really mean it, but I've said, well, I'm glad you like it, but I don't always love having to edit a longer format show.
Right, exactly.
It just takes so much longer is what it is. I mean, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but you're a podcaster. You know what it's like to edit stuff.
Oh,
even
God,
if it's 5 minutes. It takes double, triple the time to edit that thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it depends on how heavily you edit, too.
Yep.
So I'll go into the stretch goals real quick, and this will be quick because I only have two of them currently, and I'm working on some other ones, and I have ideas for those already, but I haven't done the cost analysis on those yet to make sure that, I'm not shooting myself in the foot. But the first stretch goal is going to be card sleeves. So like the magic card sleeves, I'm going to have a custom because I know you can get those custom made. Those are going to basically have the Rogue Chess card logo and stuff on the back of them, and then of course be clear on the other side. So that's if you know that's important to you. I know some people who are into card gaming and stuff. They use their sleeves quite a lot.
That's a really good idea because you're right. If you're even though this isn't like a collectible game like Magic or whatever, the fact that it looks so nice and you're going to be handling them a fair amount. If you're say snacking or something, then you want to make sure that you're able to keep these nice and that you can that they can last, because you want to use them time after time after time. So you're really hoping that it's going to last. And you're playing with people, you don't know where they've been or what they've been doing. So the fact that you can have those sleeves to help protect it so that you can use your game for many, many years to come, it's just a great thing to do.
Right. And also, like, let's say you don't want to put your cards in those sleeves, but you get them in the mail because you know they were part of your reward. You know, you can always put other cards in those, and you could put your playing cards in those. So, like, you know, you take a poker deck and stick them in there and say, hey, look, I got a rogue chess poker deck. But the next one, though, the next stretch goal I'm really excited about, and that is the power cards.
Okay.
So I have designed a couple of these. I haven't designed all these yet, but, you know, the concept's in my head. It's going to be 18 power cards. And what power cards do is they're actually really powerful cards. They allow you to affect the other pieces, the other guy's pieces. So, like, one of them is going to be telekinesis. So you can literally push his piece across the board or move his piece somewhere else. Like, get out of my way. Like a Jedi, basically.
Jedi for chess.
Jedi for chess. And then another one is if he has, let's say you've captured his rook, one of his rooks and one of his bishops, you can play this on his queen, and you can force him to pull his queen off the board and replace her with a bishop and a rook, because that's what a queen is. It's basically a bishop and a rook combined.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you're basically doing is so basically what you're doing is you're allowing him to have all the movement and stuff. You're not killing any of his pieces. You're just breaking it up. So I think that's a fun card. And the reason why the power cards are separate and why they're cards that I would never choose to put in this deck is because they're really that crazy, like I was talking about with Nightmare Chess. You know, it has that craziness to it that I think some people would like and would have fun with. Maybe not every game, but it's something you can add in or take out, you know, and I'll probably only do 18 of those ever, but that'll be a stretch goal. And then another stretch goal that I've been thinking about, but I haven't decided on because I haven't done any price quotes on this or whatever. When we get to some point, and I'll probably have Rogue Chess t-shirts. You know, people like t-shirts, apparently. I didn't really want them to be rewards because I thought, hey, man, it's just a t-shirt. But I was talking to somebody, and they're like, oh, no, man, people love t-shirts. I was like, okay,
yep.
Maybe that'll be one of my stretch goals. So if you get this level or higher, everyone who bid this level or higher gets a Rogue Chess t-shirt. And I was going to do challenge coins, like the army challenge coins, but someone convinced me that that was better for tournaments, save those for tournaments. So if people get into Rogue Chess tournaments, you win, you could win a coin. And I don't know if you're familiar with challenge coins, but I work for the army, so I've been exposed to these quite a bit. A challenge coin, it's kind of like a medal in a way. So if you're doing something for like a colonel or a general, and it can be anyone who buys these, sometimes sergeants have them. But if you do something really noteworthy for them, they will do what's called coining you. So they'll coin you. And it's like getting a medal from this individual person, but it's not recognized by the military or anything. Like, it's not rank. It's not an official medal or anything. But it's just kind of like, here, job well done. And what they use these for, like, some people just display them, and that's nice. Of course, I have a couple of them from working for the Army. But what you do is when you're in a bar with a bunch of Army guys, you pull out your coin, and the highest-ranking coin drinks for free the rest of the night.
Ooh.
So that's kind of neat. So I thought that'd be kind of cool for tournaments and stuff. You know, people get, somebody wins a Rogue Chess tournament and they get a Rogue Chess coin. And then, you know, like, not that would give you anything official, but if I'm at a bar and you come up to me and you say, hey, you're the guy who created Rogue Chess, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he pulls out his coin. It's like, oh, I guess I gotta buy you a beer. You know, stuff like that, you know, or I'll start a conversation. And plus, I've got the design in my head, and they would look really neat. They're good, heavy coins. They're very quality. And of course, it would have like the skull on one end because that would be like heads, and you know, maybe the logo on the back, which would be tails. So I just thought that would be kind of fun to do.
Well, I think that's a great idea because you're right. That would play out perfectly for tournaments or conventions or anything like that. Yeah. Just in my experience from my limited and recent experience at cons, one of the most enjoyable parts for me, and actually at TotalCon, which you both go to, I don't game there. I run one event, but I go to hang out and to chat with people. And this is going to sound awful. It's going to make me sound like an alcoholic, but like to go hang out and drink and just like to socialize and network.
Dude, that's half the reason why I go to cons. I mean, I always, and it's why, if you ever notice, if you're ever at a con that I'm at, you'll notice I don't schedule events before noon.
That's smart.
Because I have done that before and I have hated it. Because I'll get up at 9 and go, I got an event at 10 and I am so hungover And that's not good for the players, not good for anybody, it's not good for me. So that gives me a chance to get some breakfast in me and chill out a little bit.
This last time at TotalCon, I really wanted to go to one of the panels where the promotional director, Angela, was going to be there to talk about running a convention, her and a bunch of people. I knew she was really nervous about this because she doesn't, although she's been on my shows several times, she doesn't like to speak in front of people because she's shy.
Right.
She's very introverted, so I wanted there to be another friendly face for her. But the problem was that it was Saturday morning, and Friday night I met a listener. I met Patrick, my first listener meeting in person, who's not someone I knew beforehand. And we hung out all night. I don't even remember what time I went to bed, but we hung out all night drinking. We were just chatting and talking about games and this and that. And next thing I know, I got like 2 hours of sleep, and I'm dragging my butt out of bed because I wanted to be at the panel for Angela. And I was like, I can't do this. I don't even know what time it is. Or did I shower? I don't remember, but I'm going, and I can't do that anymore.
Right. Yeah, so I religiously, if I go to a con, that con does not exist to me before noon as far as I'm concerned. You know, because like I do, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, but, you know, I do other things at cons as well, and I got to be on my game. So I just basically, I figure, you know, from somewhere around 10 o'clock at night till noon the next day, I'm just, that's fun and hanging out, and I believe in getting a good night's sleep. I'm not one of these, I don't go to cons and stay up all night and then get 2 hours of sleep and then go do stuff because I don't like functioning like that. I get at least 5 or 6 hours of sleep.
Well, at least.
And a shower every time.
Well, at least with TotalCon, for example, when you go there, you're an industry guest. You're there partly because you're awesome, but also because you need to perform is kind of what it is.
Yes.
You're there because you're a draw, so you have all these events, you go, the panels you're on, all this other stuff you do, but it's fun, but you're working really in a way.
I have to perform. I have to have my stuff together. And if I don't, I look stupid and I really don't like, you know, I don't like looking stupid in front of people.
Yeah, definitely. You spend all this time to prepare for whether it's that or whatever con you're going to. And like you do all these podcasts. You do all these wonderful podcasts, one of which, the Conman podcast, one of my favorites. When you are on an episode of that, because I know you have a whole crew, you're on because you've attended a con and you might be there in some sort of official capacity as well. But you're also there because you're covering it for your podcast. So you can't just be drunk or whatever, or goofing off the entire, you need to get that content so you can give it to your listeners.
Right. And you gotta, I might be working video equipment, audio equipment, and you cannot drink and record. It just doesn't work. You screw the recording up, I didn't hit the button, you know, it's like, you know, and you gotta be on your game. And you gotta be able to talk and be coherent, because if you're drunk and you're doing an interview, everyone knows. I mean, it's clearly obvious that you're drunk when you're doing an interview. So for the TriTac podcast, I have been drinking on a couple of the episodes, back in the past. I don't drink too much anymore when I do the podcast, because I go back and listen to those and I cringe because I'm like, I can hear me drunk in this.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's it. I'm done. I'm not doing that anymore.
On my other show, Geeks Explicitly, in early episodes, when I was going to record, I would grab a beer and sit down and just casually drink with me and my then co-host. We would talk about whatever, but then you listen halfway through and you're thinking, what the heck happened there?
Right.
So a lot of podcasts out there, I really think a lot of the gaming podcasts have this whole mentality where the hosts are like, well, I'm here to hang out with my friends, which is cool because it has that whole familiarity thing going on. But part of it is that they're drinking and they're just trading inside jokes, like a bunch of people hanging out in a basement. And for me, as a listener, that's not of interest to me. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear your unique perspective about something. And like you said, you can't be talking about it, never mind operating that equipment, if you've been chugging things back all night.
Yeah. And mind you, when it comes to drinking, I can do my fair share. So I really don't want to even get started on that when I'm doing something professional, because it's like it spoils the whole thing. It's like I don't even need to be doing this. Maybe I shouldn't even be doing this if I'm going to treat it this way.
Let's talk about your other podcast for a second, because you talked about the Conman and you mentioned TriTac. Yep. Why don't you tell us about both of them? And I'm going to do it. I hate to ask, but do you have one that's a favorite?
Okay, so
that's totally putting you on the spot, and you can just cop out.
Let's see. All right, so for TriTac, I have a couple that are really good. I'm trying to think of my favorite. All right, so it's hard to pick one favorite because for different reasons, you know, you like different ones. Different ones are favorite in your mind at that time for a certain reason. The one of my favorite ones, I had Jess Hartley on, or we had Jess Hartley on. And I don't know if you're familiar with Jess Hartley or not, but she is a writer for White Wolf, and she's written a bunch of White Wolf stuff and some other stuff too. And we did an episode on females in gaming, the perspective of female gamers, because it was like we were talking about, we're like, you know, we're all male hosts, our show is male. I mean, you know, we're always giving the male perspective on everything. It's like, but we know there are female gamers. I mean,
they exist. What?
They do exist. So I'd met Jess at another con, and I contacted her because I'm friendly with her on Facebook, and I said, hey, would you like to come on and, you know, and be our, you know, be our female guest and talk about females in gaming? And she did. It was a great episode. It was a fantastic episode. And since then, we've gotten a female host. We went out of our way to try and find a female host. And one of our guys was like, yeah, I got this female friend of mine. It's a very good friend of mine. She's a gamer. And she would like to come on and be one of our hosts. And I was like, let's do it. Because I really want the female voice, the female perspective in there. So that was cool. I liked that a lot. That was a great episode. Trying to think, what was another really good episode that we did for Tri-Tech? We've had some funny ones. I like the one we did with for dinosaurs. That was kind of cool because I thought that was going to be a really hard one. So Tri-Tech, one of the games they make is called Frenchworthy. And Frenchworthy, it's an interdimensional game, so your characters can travel to any dimension, any time. So you can be playing modern day characters, but you can wind up in a dino world or in a cowboy world or samurai or whatever. It's kind of like Stargate meets Sliders meets Voyager. I don't know if you remember that show or not. But, you know.
How young do you think I am?
No. I don't know. I don't know if you remember that show or not. But, so we did one on dinosaurs, which I really liked because I didn't think we'd have a whole lot to talk about, you know. But as we got into it, it got really interesting, and all these like really cool adventure ideas came about because we were talking about it. That one was very organic. We didn't do a lot of research because how are you going to research role playing in a dino world? Okay, so I know the names of several dinosaurs. Great. How does that really help me explain how to role play in a dino world? So that was, it was kind of like us playing off of each other. We came up with a bunch of great ideas for that. So that, I really like the show for that reason. But for Common Podcast, my favorite episode is the four-parter I did for Dragon Con.
Yeah,
I thought that was some gold. I thought we really, because Dragon Con was fun, so it was easy to talk about. It was easy to talk to make that a fun show and make an interesting show because it's Dragon Con and interesting stuff and fun stuff happens there. But what what was the real kicker on that one was Mike's story. My buddy Mike had a really funny incident happen to him there. And I don't want to spoil it. If you're listening to this and this even remotely interests you, go to studio187.com/conmen-podcast. Just go to studio187.com. There's a link on there on the toolbar to go to Conmen Podcast. And go down to the Dragon Con episode. Just listen to the last one. If you don't listen to any other episode of The Con Men, listen to the last episode, part four of Dragon Con. Mike tells this hilarious story. And I mean, he had me in tears the first time he told me this story. And I was like, we have to retell that. I have to get that on tape. And he was like, I don't know if I want to record that. And I was like, dude, come on, man. This is gold. We have to record this. And he was listening to it again. He was feeling a little bit, you know, embarrassed by it, but everybody was loving it. You know, his wife heard it, and she was laughing at him.
That's love.
His mom heard it, and she was laughing at him, but not laughing at him, like at him, because he didn't do anything. He didn't do anything wrong. It's something that happened to him.
It's just a very funny situation.
It was a funny situation, so it was awesome. So that would be my favorite comment episode. Yeah, so that's my two podcasts. And if you're wondering, so Tri-Tech's my first podcast. We're in year three of that. We're getting ready to go into year four.
That's a huge show, too. You have a lot of listeners for that.
Yeah, we have a pretty good listenership for that. I think we're in the 2,000-ish range, somewhere around in there. It's kind of hard, because you look at the stats, and it's kind of hard to tell what all that really means, because, you know, it's like unique users from this day to this day, and number of hits from this day to this day, and number of downloads from this day to this day, and I'm like, And then there's another one, number of something, and it says, and this you can assume this to be your number of subscribers, but if you put in a different criteria, that number changes. So I'm like, so is it this many subscribers? That many subscribers? How many people are listening? It's really hard to tell because you got people listening to it from iTunes and people listen to it from the website. I don't know. So
this might be a little too technical for people, but do you use like Blueberry or Libsyn or what are you guys using for that kind of stuff?
Well, we are through Podbean, and Podbean has its own statistic thing that we use. But it's like I'm saying, that one is not very definitive, so I don't know. And I don't even know how to check the iTunes one. I don't know how you check number of subscribers from iTunes. Bruce set that up, so he knows more about it than I do.
I don't think there is a way to check that.
Right, there might not be. So I don't know. We'll have to look. I have to get with you because you sound like you're a little more technical with some of the stuff than I am.
I don't know. I'm just a guy behind a mic. That's all I am.
No, you've done your research on this because you're talking about it, so you probably know something I don't know. So I'd like to hit you up on that at some point offline. Maybe we can figure out, get a good hard number on that. Because, you know, people ask that, and it's like, it's a good question.
Well, I'll put it this way. I know your show has many more people who listen to it than mine. But as you and I have both agreed on before, it's not the number of people who listen. It's how engaged your listeners are. You can have 10 people who listen, and if they love what you do, nothing else matters.
Right, right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, we would like more feedback than we get. So, like, if you have, you know, 100 listeners and I have 1,000, but you get twice the feedback I get, I feel like your show is more successful than mine because you've got people who are involved and who care. These people may listen, but do they really care that much? Who knows? I don't know. It's hard to tell. How can you tell? Because you don't get any feedback from them.
Exactly.
We've been fortunate.
Black hole.
Yep. Yeah, we've been fortunate. We do get some feedback. Not a lot. We'd like more, but we've had a couple people. And the funny thing is whenever we get listeners' questions, we make a show out of it because we're trying to encourage people. We'll do a whole show on listener questions, and we'll name the people who ask the question and answer the question personally. So, you know, if you become a TriTac fan, please write us. We would love to talk to you about it. But TriTac is a company. It's an independent gaming company. They've been around forever and ever and ever. They've been around, they came out, I think in like 78 or something like that. And Rich is, I think it's like the oldest indie company, longest lasting indie role playing company around. It's gotta be. But he has, Rich has, or TriTac has, they have Fringeworthy, they have Viewer 13, Stalk of the Night Fantastic, they have a game called Incursion and Weird Zone, a couple games, quite a few games. And they're a lot of fun. We love them. Or else we wouldn't have started doing the podcast for them. TriTac podcast is the official podcast for TriTac games. And we don't just talk about TriTac products. We always bring it back to TriTac products because that's who we're representing. But most of our shows are geared towards, and this is done on purpose, are geared towards covering all just role-playing in general. So, like, we have a show on the anti-hero, how to play the anti-hero, how to play the good guy, how to play the bad guy. We've done shows on all those. The show on women in gaming and how to, like, when you're playing, we got into what it's like for males to play female characters and vice versa. We got into, you know, we've done shows on how to kill, when it's right to kill a character and what's the best way for characters to die. We did a show on saying yes. So it's like, you know, if you're a game master, you know, how you should say yes to your players a lot of times, you know, and ways to do that without seeming like you're just rolling over. And just giving your players, you know, just giving into your players, how to say yes but still be tough on them, you know, just all that. And I mean, 200 shows, we've got topic, and there are quite a few shows that are very game oriented. So we'll talk about Fringeworthy, and we'll get into the nitty gritty of Fringeworthy. If you're not playing Fringeworthy, just go to the next episode, you know, because that one's not going to be for you.
Yep. Well, not every episode has something that everyone's going to like. Like, I find with Wargaming Recon, I have some shows where it's more, like, when I have a guest on, it's more conversational. We're talking about maybe something a little outside the norm, but then there are other episodes where maybe I talk about resources that might be of use. Like, I did one episode not long ago on how to construct an affordable gaming table and what you can do for that. So that was maybe a little bit more of a technical how-to. And then there are some where I do reviews of products. People might send me something, and I talk about, oh, this is great or that. And every year I do what I call my holiday gift guide, where I pick different products based on different price ranges and recommend them and why. And so there's always kind of something different for every one depending on what the interest is, but not every show may be of interest to all listeners. And it's kind of hard to balance that, I think.
Yeah, it's tough. But we, you know, you do what you can. You know, you try to, you want to incorporate as many people as you can and get as many people interested as possible. But we're just happy people listen. We're happy people like it. People like you. but if, you know, if you want to check any of that out, you can just get it all on my webpage. I mean, the TriTac podcast is not hosted at my page, but if you go to my page, it's just nice and easy central point for everything. There is a place right there for it, talks about the podcast, and there's a link right there to take you to it, take you to iTunes or take you to our website, and you can listen to either, you know, do it either way you want to do it. So yeah, I got that. We talked about Cube of Death, and that's, yeah. You know, I don't really want to get into that here. You can find that on my website. Look it up. It's a lot of fun. There's an episode of the Common podcast where I have a live episode that we recorded. If you want to get a really good idea, just listen to that. That spells it out as clear as can be. It's basically, I mean, just in a nutshell, it's a trivia game and an RPG combined into one. So you're basically, it's like you're playing a role-playing game. But the way you do damage to your enemy is by answering trivia questions. And it's a short game, so it's like they're 30-minute games. So it's not like a campaign or anything like that. You don't make up a character or anything. You basically just say, I'm playing a warrior, and your warrior gets a special ability, and then you do your trivia. So it's all the best stuff of trivia, but it's also really geeked out way beyond just geek questions. It's actually geek mechanic. So I really like that game. I think it's a lot of fun. I'm going to eventually do a Kickstarter on that where I expand it out to like, you know, 300 cards or something like that. So you'll get like a big box full of cards and it'll have like ultimate replayability. But that's down the road a little ways.
It's a lot of fun and really easy to pick up.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's simple as can be. It and yet hard at the same time. It's funny because, you know, you'll get people in there asking, you know, you ask them a question. I'll be like, oh man, I should know this. And that's, you know, that's usually a good sign of a good trivia question. Or you'll ask one person, somebody on the other side will go, oh, I know this. And this person will be like, who knows this? And they're like, well, I know this, you know. And that's that was a delicate balance. You know, it was really hard to make questions that were hard yet not ridiculous hard. You know, like the only people are going to be able to answer this are people sitting on Wikipedia going, you know, like, who was Speed Racer's mother's aunt? Because in one episode, she's talking to her aunt such and such. That question, that's no good. I mean, that's there's no way anyone's going to answer that. You know,
well, I remember, like, you stumped me with a Star Wars one of those, what is it, rapid fire ones where it's and it was about the bounty hunters on the bridge of the Star Destroyer. And there was one, I was like, I know this, and I couldn't think, I got every other single one of them, but that one stupid damn bounty hunter I couldn't get.
But the beauty of that question is it's hard because you're like, I asked that question and the image appears in your mind because it's iconic as anything. You can see all those bounty hunters. And if you are a fan of Star Wars, you should know most of them. So you should be able to go through the picture in your head and go, well, I know Bosk. I know Forlome. I know, you know, so you should be able to do that, even though he didn't mention them by name.
Well, it's funny because Bosk is the one that I missed, but although I couldn't remember his name, I knew that he was a Trandoshan. So I'm thinking, wait, it's a Trandoshan, but what's his name? I don't know, right. But I keep on going back. He's a Trandoshan, and I'm going through Forlome and Zuckuss and Dengar and IG-88 and right. Boba Fett. And yet Bosk doesn't enter into it, but I know what species he is.
Right. And that's the beauty of – that's when you know you've got good questions. And I've you know, I've play tested this at TotalCon the last 2 years. And James Carpio has played this at a couple of cons for me. He's run a couple of games at other cons. You know, it's been playtested quite a bit. Oh, and we ran at the Gygax unboxing. They played a game there. And it holds up, you know. No one has said, except for Tim Kask, no one has said that he didn't like the questions. And he doesn't count. No. Now, Tim, you're listening to this. I'm funning with you. And he gave me a hard time. He didn't like my questions, but that's okay.
There's always next year.
Yeah, there's always next year.
So you TriTac and Common for your podcast and Cube of Death, and now we got Rogue Chess. So you have that, and these are over at your website, Studio 187, right?
Yep, that's correct, studio187.com, and that's everything me. Now, you can find me, of course, I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Google+, so on G+, I'm Peter Bryant. Just come find me. I don't use G+ that much, but I'm trying. I'm trying to get into it.
Good luck.
I'm a Facebook addict, but you can find me at, if you go to facebook.com /Peter.B.Bryant. That's B-R-Y-A-N-T. That's my personal page. My company page is facebook.com/studio187.games. And then there's also a /conmenpodcast. And I think that's everything I have except for Cube of Death. Don't worry about that. If you get to the other two, you'll find that one.
Well, your the studio187.com site is gorgeous because I remember what you had before, and this is just such a wonderful redesign of it. And this happened not long ago, but the navigation is really smooth and easy, and just the information, everything's fantastic. It makes me want to go and visit it that much more. And I love how you have everything there. So whether someone's interested in your games, interested in your podcast, or if they want to get involved with you on social media, like, you have it all there. It's really easy to get to. So if listeners are interested in any of your social media, whatever, like you said, maybe the best place to go is your website, the Studio 187. Yeah.
Well, that's why I built it that way. I mean, because before it wasn't that functional. As a matter of fact, before I hadn't even updated the website in like a year and a half or 2 years or something like that, and it just really was not functional. It was just like a placeholder, and I realized, I felt like, I don't even know why I have this thing if I'm not going to do anything with it. I mean, like, everything I'm doing is on Facebook, and that's how I'm interacting with everybody. I was like, this really needs to be more centrally focused. So when I rebuilt it, I built it with that concept that everything I do will run through this. And like, you can go on Facebook and see, that's, if you want all my latest and greatest up to the second current news, go to Facebook. And that's really what Facebook is good for. Mm-hmm. But if you want to know like the big ideas of things I'm doing, you want to go to the website because it's got dedicated pages that will tell you everything you need to know. And of course you can contact me through the website. You can, what else is there on the website my blog. Yeah, that's what I wanted to mention, my blog. So, I write a blog almost every week. I haven't written one in 2 weeks because I've been busy with all this Kickstarter stuff, but I try to write some kind of gaming-centric blog.
So, although you haven't been working on your blog because you have the Kickstarter coming, which is on Monday, June 24th, right? But once Kickstarter lets you have some time, you're going to go back to your blog, Blix's Blogorama, I think is what you call it.
Yeah, Blix's Blogorama. Yeah, it's, I don't know. You know, it's funny too because I never wrote a blog before, and I started writing a blog, and I thought it was going to be hard, but it's actually quite easy. You just pick a topic and start writing, and I try not to make them too long, but yeah, you know, my next one will probably be about this Kickstarter.
So, just to recap for everyone, you have all the podcasts. Studio 187 is probably the best place to go. And then the Kickstarter starts on the 24th of June, 2013. And how much are you looking to raise again? $2,000,
$3,000?
$3,000. So $3,000, and then you get those awesome stretch goals. And when does the Kickstarter end? What's the finale?
I gave it 40 days. So it is going to end on, where is it?
I have you doing a little bit of a calendar searching.
No, I got it right here. It ends, not much. Oh, man, I don't know. 40 days.
So 40 days after June 24th, it ends.
I thought I had it on here, but I don't. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, that's okay. Yeah. I totally threw you a curveball with that one.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah.
Well, I have to say, I really hope listeners will participate in the Kickstarter. I can tell you right now, I don't know what level, but I'm going to be backing at some sort of level for this thing because it is just, it is so incredible. It's chess, but it's not, but it's better, and it's different. I mean, it's so many different things, and it has such high production values. And this is just from the promotional deck that you sent me. I can really only imagine what the final product's going to be like, and what it's going to be like for people who are doing it at those higher levels, the retailer levels, where they get the boxes and all that other stuff, the T-shirts and like all that other stuff. I can only picture how incredible that's going to be. So just going by this, I know it's going to be awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And the card you got in your hand, I mean, it's going to be this quality or better, but this is pretty close to what you're going to, I mean, this is, other than fixing errors and maybe a little bit of tweaking on the design, just a little bit, depending on what my graphic designer says. This is it. This is what you, I mean, this is going to be what it is. So I'm excited. Very, very excited and nervous as all get out. I couldn't sleep last night, by the way. No, I mean, really.
Shouldn't laugh. I really shouldn't, because I can only imagine the anxiety behind all this.
There is. I kept waking up in the middle of the night. Distribution. International sales. I'd wake up and I'd be like, but what if I'm like, God, just go to sleep.
Oh, your wife must have loved it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's, go to sleep, Peter. It'll take care.
Right. It'll be
just
fine.
Shut up already.
Yeah. Well, you know how it is when you get focused on something.
Well, definitely. I mean, in the intro, I talked a little bit about the 100th episode, and I have so much stuff planned for this 100th. I can't even talk about some of it now in episodes because I'm trying to reveal it a little bit at a time. But it's the most amount of stuff I've ever had to do in a single time for anything podcast related. So much so that my wife said to me, you know, you've been recording a lot lately. Because normally I do two shows, Geeks Explicitly, which is a weekly. And then this one, Wargaming Recon, comes out twice a month. So I try to stagger this and the other one's weekly. But for the past several weeks, I've been recording 2, 3, 4 nights a week or doing stuff. And I can tell she's just like, can you stop and just come? Like, I haven't seen you. I don't know what you look like.
Right, right. Come join the family. Why don't you be part of the family? Yeah, yeah. I'm getting that right now because I'm prepping for all this stuff. And my wife is just like, I guess you're going downstairs again. I'm like, yeah, because that's where my office is.
Yep.
I'm like, look, baby, I'm sorry. Just give me till next week and I'll revert more back to normal. I'm like, but I'm doing promo stuff and I'm getting my video ready. Video, if you do a Kickstarter, start your video production as early as possible because apparently you have to have one, and it is unless you're a video guy, it's a pain in the butt.
I am so glad I don't do a video podcast because, like, it looks cool, and I listen to a few podcasts about podcasting, and they're all doing video now, and it looks wonderful, and I look at it, and I think, that looks really cool. I should do it, and then I see what's involved with it, and I'm like, oh, I can't edit. I can't do that. Never mind. Edit it.
Hey, you know how, like, when you first started podcasting and you hated your voice because everybody does?
Oh, I still hate my voice.
Right, right. Well, of course, we all do. All of us that podcast it. So if you're listening to this and you think our voice is okay, we don't. And sometimes I listen to it and I listen to it where I'm talking. I'm like, man, I sound like an idiot. I can't believe it. Like people listen to this. If you really want to hate yourself, put a video camera in your face. Like when you watch video of yourself, you see every little thing that you do. Right, and I'm not going to point them out because I don't want people looking at my videos and going, "Oh, look at that! He's right. He does do that." I'm hoping you don't notice it. I do because I pick myself apart. But like, yeah, yeah, I was like, if you hate your voice, wait till you get on video. You know, you'll hate everything about yourself. You know, because you're looking at yourself and you're going, "Why do you do that? Why you have a tick? What is it you're doing?" You know, and it's just like, oh. So I don't know. I'm hoping I can get over it. You know.
Well, I was a guest on Pete Figtree does these 101 G+ video podcast things for his show Ruthless Diastema, and yeah. I was, in his words, his expert guest, not my word, I would never call myself that, but expert guest on Wargaming 101 with me. It was video and recording in my office, my podcast studio, and we're chatting, and I happen to look and I realize there's a box behind me, and it just annoys the I'm like, what the heck is a box doing there? And I'm thinking, is anyone else going to notice a box? Are they going to like how interesting my background is? Oh, yeah. And what am I wearing? And how am I picking myself apart? And afterwards got done, and I just apologized to him. I was like, I'm so sorry. It was so awful. And he's like, what are you talking about? Well, did you notice I did this? And did you see that box? I couldn't unfocus on the box.
Right, right.
And halfway through, it's like, I should just go up and move that box, but I can't because I have to talk. And next time, I'm going to move that box. So the box is not there now.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. It's mind-wracking. I mean, just like doing this stuff. It's fun and I love it and everything like that. But at the same time, you know, it's not all roses.
Well, so. It's so much work, whether you're doing a Kickstarter or a podcast or blog, whatever you're doing, it's so much work for all this. And so many of us who do any of this kind of stuff, we're one people shops. So
yes.
We got to be everything and everything to everyone and expert in this and, you know, whatever. And it's hard. Plus, like, you have a real job. I have a real job. We do this.
Families, kids.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes, I mean, yeah, you got a kid. It takes up so much time.
And I'm not complaining. We're not complaining. We're just talking, you know, because
like, we try to find ways to fit it all in because it's all important to us.
Right, 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 right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause like, I got all this Kickstarter I'm preparing for, right? We're celebrating Father's Day a little bit late because of other things that we had to do. But as we're recording this tonight, tomorrow night, I got to make dinner for my folks. So they're coming over. I really need to be working on my Kickstarter, but I got to take time. I have to. And I mean, and I love my folks. So it's not like this thing is like, oh God, I have to do this. I want to do this, but you know, it's kind of like, but I have this other thing I have to do, so like eat quickly. But, you know.
But, like, yeah, no, your inner monologue is saying that. But at the same time, you really don't feel that way because they're your parents, you love them, and right. It's important to you. So you want to be there with them, but then you right. also, you want like four of you. So yes. one of you could be doing the Kickstarter yes. and the podcast and like all this stuff. That's what you want.
And I want one of them to go to bed and go to sleep.
Yeah.
So he can go to work in the morning. You know, because there are plenty of times where I'll be working on stuff and go to bed at 2 o'clock and I have to get up at 6, so I go to work on 4 hours of sleep and do that several days in a row. It's killer. But, again, I love doing it. And, hey, I wouldn't be where I am today with the stuff that I'm doing. You know, for the con men, we've been working hard on this. I just got accepted as a media guest at Gen Con.
That's fantastic.
So I'm going to be pressed there. And I've already got people sending me things to interview them. So, and that's how I found out about it, because they actually didn't get back with me. I got this email that said, would you want to interview me at Gen Con? And I'm like, sure. And then I was like, so I went to the Gen Con site and I'm like, did they accept? Oh, look at that. Yeah, I'm pressed. So that was really cool. And I'm kind of hoping Dragon Con's next. I'm going to apply for that next. And being that I got accepted at Gen Con, I'm kind of hoping that'll parlay into media guest at Dragon Con. And if I get media guest at Dragon Con, I might be able to get some access to some really, really cool interviews. And I can stick it in your face, Ben Gerber.
He can't talk anymore about that Stan Lee story, can he?
Right. Gotcha, buddy. I'm coming for you. No, actually, I told him that. I was like, man, I got to step my game up. Look at you with this guest and that guest. You're killing me. And he just laughed. He's like, hey, man, I just network. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get you. I'm going to catch up.
He's a machine.
He's my friendly competition.
Well, for me, it's kind of funny because when I first started this way back in 06, I never even imagined about having a guest on. I never even imagined anyone besides myself would listen to me talk. And so right. then like one hurdle after another, and then it got to the point where I was like, okay, I think I can ask for someone to come on as a guest. So I asked someone, and then like, not that any guest is less important than anyone else, but like you work your way up to someone who's harder to get. And, right. and then it's kind of come even further. Like you were like, oh, can I come on your show? So then there's, well, now people are approaching me to come on. I don't yeah. have to do the legwork to say, hey, can I get you to spare 2 minutes to come on or whatever?
Right, like, right.
You have the time in your schedule to talk to me. So it's kind of cool.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm kind of hoping to see it grow. You know, eventually, maybe even I'll get a Con Men TV show. Who knows?
That'd be awesome.
Cool. That would be cool.
The new Kevin Smith.
Yeah, we'll see.
I could talk to you for like another 9 hours. I really could. Yeah. But as you said, we all need sleep. And at the time we're recording this, the Bruins are playing for the Stanley Cup, which longtime listeners, I know you're not a sports person.
No, but I understand.
Longtime listeners know I'm a huge – I've actually asked guests to reschedule so I can watch a Bruins game.
Well, then I feel honored.
And I haven't recorded. My wife was watching. I don't even know what happened. I'm hoping they won, but I need to find out. And we have work in the morning. You have work in the morning down in Maryland. I have work up here. It has been such a huge joy for you to come on. And
excellent. Well, thank you. It's been awesome being on the show.
As I told you at TotalCon last time, seeing you the first time I went on a panel, I knew that it would be really cool to get to talk with you. But at the same time, there was like that barrier because I'm just this con attendee and you're an industry guest. So it was so much fun at the con, just sitting down with you and your friends while you guys are having breakfast and just hanging out and chatting. And I talked about it I don't even remember what number, but an episode of Wargaming Recon where I covered the con. And I talked about how that was one of my con highlights. So having you here on the show, it's huge for me. I really appreciate it. And I wish you all the best and then some with not only Rogue Chess, but everything.
Cool. Well, thanks. No, I think it's great. I'm glad I met you. I'm glad we became friends. You've been a fun guy to talk to over the time since we met at TotalCon. You know, we talk on Facebook quite a bit, and I think you have a great show, and I'm happy to be on here, and I'm glad you're helping me promote this. So just spread the word, and if any of you are listening to this and you decide, hey, I want to go check out this, if you've listened this far, you're going to go check it out, I'm sure. I
mean, you have to.
It's probably already up on your computer, because otherwise you'd have been like, forget this. Which is fine. If you don't want to, if you're not into chess, you're not into this, hey, I'm cool with it, whatever. But if you're totally into it, you go check it out. Just please spread the word, because that's how Kickstarter works. I mean, I don't have a marketing budget. That's why I have Kickstarter, because I'm trying to raise money. My marketing budget is you guys going on this show. So if you like it and you think it's something that other people would like, please spread the word. And if you know anybody else who could spread the word really well, like if any of you are friends with Monty Cook or anything like that, you know, I would not be opposed to you getting him to share it as well, or any one of these guys. That would be fantastic.
You got to get Tom Vassell a copy. That's what you got
to
do.
Well, I tried to get Tom a copy, and he said, we don't do Kickstarter stuff unless, you know, something, something. I was like, okay, that's cool.
He did a Kickstarter.
No, he did a Kickstarter, but he doesn't, because he gets so many requests for Kickstarters. They get a ton of them, and I totally understand that.
That is understandable.
That he can't, you know, they just can't cover them all. So their policy is, they have a commercial venue where, if you pay them, they will pimp your show. Which is cool. I mean, you know, they are a business now. You know, he got funded. That's what he does for work now.
Yeah, so they gotta eat.
Right, he's running a business. He's got a family to feed. So yeah, I totally get that. And I was just like, well, you know, I don't really have that kind of budget right now, but you know, that's cool. But you know, if you happen to listen to this show and you want to promote it, hey, please do.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yep, well, yep. Just share it on Facebook. I'd be happy.
So for any listeners who are interested in any of the stuff we've been talking about, whether it's this or the blog, whatever we've been talking about, you guys all know the deal. You know you want to go to the show notes, because not only does the show notes have all the stuff and links to everything, but it's also a great way to give that feedback that Blix was talking about earlier. Because as you all know, I love your feedback. My favorite part of all this is communicating with each and every one of the listeners, whether it's in person or text or whatever it is. So you want to head to wargamingforums.com/WR94. That's wargamingforums.com/WR94. That will have everything you could possibly want and then some about this episode. It'll have links to everything. You just click, click, click. You can go to the Kickstarter. You can find Studio 187. You can find everything you need. You can find out about my 100th episode, everything. So just remember that web address. If nothing else, that will have all you will ever need. And I have to thank you again, because this has been a great episode. It's been fantastic.
Cool. Well, thank you. And hey, real quick on that last note on that, if you go to the comments and you have a question for me or you want to make a comment for me, Jonathan will hit me up and I will go answer it.
Yeah, I will definitely pass any of that on. And I always try to give, and maybe I shouldn't, but I always try to give guests some preliminary stats on how many people have listened. And any comments that listeners give me that deal directly with a guest, I always try to pass on. I did that with Henry Hyde when he came on a while back. He's a magazine editor in the UK. And right. People sent stuff, and I was like, Henry, did you know that I'm sending them emails and this and that? And like everyone, I'm always passing stuff on, because I think it's important for people like you who are guests who are coming on. You spend time, and you do it because you want to, but also I think it's important for you to know that there's that return on investment. And it's, for me, it's not just a financial thing. It's your time. It's your energy. To know that it was worthwhile, that hopefully, even if someone's not selling something, whereas like you, I'm hoping people will come and support the Kickstarter.
Right.
But even if it's just like to listen to podcast episodes or go to the blog, show support in some way. And I think it's important. So that's where I think feedback is really important from listeners, because it lets people like you and me know if we're doing something that people like, if we're doing something they don't like, and what to do with stuff and kind of where to go. So being able to just kind of pass on that comments, whatever they happen to be to you, I think it's pivotal.
Yep, I agree. All right, then. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you again. And as everyone knows, because every episode has this, I didn't put this in, and I don't remember who, but someone commented and they said, you didn't do it that time. So why? What was wrong? I have to, of course, give the tagline. I have to thank you all again for listening, and Peter Blitz Ryan for being here on Wargaming Recon. You guys know the drill. You know we'll be back again next time, but most importantly, you know that you need to keep on gaming. The 100th episode of Wargaming Recon is quickly approaching, and I need you. I am looking for you to share your best wargaming tips, advice, hints, anything related to wargaming, and I'm hoping to get 100 of them. I want to share all of those on the 100th episode. So I'm asking for you to submit that information to me. Feel free to leave a voicemail at 347-470-4263 or send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Please be sure to keep your tips brief, because I want to get as many of these in as I can so that the episode is not incredibly long. Try to keep them to one sentence. You can submit as many tips as you like, but there is a deadline. I need to receive your tips no later than midnight Eastern Standard Time on August 16th, 2013. That's Friday, August 16th, 2013, by midnight EST. So put your thinking caps on and get ready to share your favorite tips for best games, rules, how to make terrain, anything wargaming related, and send that info to me, Jonathan, at CWFGamecast@wargamingforums.com. Don't forget to include your name, and if you have a blog or podcast or some online presence, give me the name and the web address because I want to make sure I give a shout out when I use your tip. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the...
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly, new episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
Hi, this is Tristan.
And this is Ben.
And this is Growing Geeks, a podcast where we talk about parenting as geeks
and use our skills to raise the next generation of awesome people.
We all started out as a ball of lightning, and we'll all end up as ammonium chlorine. Somewhere in between we'll rule the world. Yeah, somewhere in between we'll rule the world. And we're gonna go down slow. Gonna go down where the flowers grow. Down, down, down where a meatball
falls. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner Podcast Network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
If you heard it and you do like it, good. If you don't like it, what I'm supposed to do.